With Mahali, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Vesali at the great wood in the hall with the peaked roof. Now at that time several Brahmin emissaries from Kosala and Magadha were residing in Vesali on some business. They heard, "It seems the ascetic Gotama, a Sakyan gone forth from a Sakyan family, is staying near Vesali at the great wood in the hall with the peaked roof. He has this good reputation. That Blessed One is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He teaches Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased. And he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. It's good to see such perfected ones." Then they went to the hall with a peaked roof in the great wood to see the Buddha. Now at that time, Venerable Nagita was the Buddha's attendant. The Brahmin emissaries went up to him and said, "Master Nagita, where is Master Gotama at present? For we want to see him." "It's the wrong time to see the Buddha. He is on retreat." So the Brahmin emissaries sat down to one side, thinking, "We'll go only after we've seen Master Gotama." Ottata, the Lichavi, together with a large assembly of Lichavis, also approached Nagita at the hall with the peaked roof. He bowed, stood to one side, and said to Nagita, "Master Nagita, where is the Blessed One at present, the perfected one, the fully awakened Buddha? For we want to see him." "It's the wrong time to see the Buddha. He is on retreat." So Ottata also sat down to one side, thinking, "I'll go only after I've seen the Blessed One, the perfected one, the fully awakened Buddha." Then the novice Siha approached Nagita. He bowed, stood to one side, and said to Nagita, "Sir, Kassapa, these several Brahmin emissaries from Kosala and Magadha, and also Ottata the Lichavi, together with a large assembly of Lichavis, have come here to see the Buddha. It'd be good if these people were to see the Buddha." "Well then, Siha, tell the Buddha yourself." "Yes, sir," replied Siha. He went to the Buddha, bowed, stood to one side and told him of the people waiting to see him, adding, "Sir, it'd be good if these people were to see the Buddha." "Well then, Siha, spread out a seat in the shade of the dwelling." "Yes, sir," replied Siha, and he did so. Then the Buddha came out of his dwelling and sat in the shade of the dwelling on the seat spread out. Then the Brahmin emissaries went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, they sat down to one side. Ottata the Lichavi, together with a large assembly of Lichavis, also went up to the Buddha, bowed and sat down to one side. Ottata said to the Buddha, "Sir, a few days ago, Sunakhatta the Lichavi came to me and said, 'Mahali, soon I will have been living in dependence on the Buddha for 3 years. I see heavenly sights that are pleasant, sensual and arousing, but I don't hear heavenly sounds that are pleasant, sensual and arousing. The heavenly sounds that Sunakhatta cannot hear, do such sounds really exist or not?' 'Such sounds really do exist, but Sunakhatta cannot hear them.' 'What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why Sunakhatta cannot hear them, even though they really do exist?' 'Mahali, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the eastern quarter so as to see heavenly sights, but not to hear heavenly sounds. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they see heavenly sights but don't hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the southern quarter, so as to see heavenly sights but not to hear heavenly sounds. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they see heavenly sights but don't hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the western quarter, so as to see heavenly sights but not to hear heavenly sounds. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they see heavenly sights but don't hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the northern quarter, so as to see heavenly sights but not to hear heavenly sounds. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they see heavenly sights but don't hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion above, below, across, so as to see heavenly sights but not to hear heavenly sounds. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they see heavenly sights but don't hear heavenly sounds. That is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the eastern quarter, so as to hear heavenly sounds but not to see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they hear heavenly sounds but don't see heavenly sights. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the southern quarter, so as to hear heavenly sounds but not to see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they hear heavenly sounds but don't see heavenly sights. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the western quarter, so as to hear heavenly sounds but not to see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they hear heavenly sounds but don't see heavenly sights. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion to the northern quarter, so as to hear heavenly sounds but not to see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they hear heavenly sounds but don't see heavenly sights. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed one-sided immersion above, below, across, so as to hear heavenly sounds but not to see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they hear heavenly sounds but don't see heavenly sights. That is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Take a mendicant who has developed two-sided immersion to the eastern quarter, so as to hear both heavenly sounds and see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they both see heavenly sights and hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed two-sided immersion to the southern quarter, so as to both hear heavenly sounds and see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they both see heavenly sights and hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed two-sided immersion to the western quarter, so as to both hear heavenly sounds and see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they both see heavenly sights and hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed two-sided immersion to the northern quarter, so as to both hear heavenly sounds and see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they both see heavenly sights and hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. Furthermore, take a mendicant who has developed two-sided immersion above, below, across, so as to both hear heavenly sounds and see heavenly sights. When they have developed immersion for that purpose, they both see heavenly sights and hear heavenly sounds. Why is that? Because that is how it is for a mendicant who develops immersion in that way. This is the cause, Mahali. This is the reason why Sunakatta cannot hear heavenly sounds that are pleasant, sensual and arousing, even though they really do exist. Surely the mendicants must live the spiritual life under the Buddha for the sake of realizing such a development of immersion. No, Mahali. The mendicants don't live the spiritual life under me for the sake of realizing such a development of immersion. There are other things that are finer, for the sake of which the mendicants live the spiritual life under me. But, sir, what are those finer things? Firstly, Mahali, with the ending of three fetters, a mendicant is a stream enterer, not liable to be reborn in the underworld, bound for awakening. This is one of the finer things for the sake of which the mendicants live the spiritual life under me. Furthermore, a mendicant, with the ending of three fetters and the weakening of greed, hate and delusion, is a once-returner. They come back to this world once only, then make an end of suffering. This, too, is one of the finer things. Furthermore, with the ending of the five lower fetters, a mendicant is reborn spontaneously and will become extinguished there, not liable to return from that world. This, too, is one of the finer things. Furthermore, a mendicant has realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and lives having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. This, too, is one of the finer things. These are the finer things for the sake of which the mendicants live the spiritual life under me. But, sir, is there a path and a practice for realizing these things?
There is, Mahali.
Well, what is it?
It is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness and right immersion. This is the path and the practice for realizing these things. This one time, Mahali, I was staying near Kosambi in Gosita's monastery. Then two renunciates, the wanderer Mundia and Jalia, the pupil of Daru Patika, came and exchanged greetings with me. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, they stood to one side and said to me, Reverend Gotama, are the soul and the body the same thing, or are they different things? Well then, reverends, listen and pay close attention. I will speak.
Yes, reverend, they replied.
I said this.
It's when a realized one arises in the world, perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He teaches Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased. And he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. A householder hears that teaching, or a householder's child, or someone reborn in some clan. They gain faith in the realized one and reflect, living in a house is cramped and dirty, but the life of one gone forth is wide open. It's not easy for someone living at home to lead the spiritual life utterly full and pure, like a polished shell. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness? After some time they give up a large or small fortune and a large or small family circle. They shave off hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Once they've gone forth, they live restrained in the monastic code, conducting themselves well and seeking alms in suitable places. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. They act skilfully by body and speech. They're purified in livelihood and accomplished in ethical conduct. They guard the sense doors, have mindfulness and situational awareness, and are content. And how is a mendicant accomplished in ethics? It's when a mendicant gives up killing living creatures, renouncing the rod and the sword. They're scrupulous and kind, living full of compassion for all living beings. This pertains to their ethics. They give up stealing. They take only what's given and expect only what's given. They keep themselves clean by not thieving. This pertains to their ethics. They give up unchastity. They are celibate, set apart, avoiding the common practice of sex. This pertains to their ethics. They give up lying. They speak the truth and stick to the truth. They're honest and trustworthy and don't trick the world with their words. This pertains to their ethics. They give up divisive speech. They don't repeat in one place what they heard in another so as to divide people against each other. Instead, they reconcile those who are divided, supporting unity, delighting in harmony, loving harmony, speaking words that promote harmony. This pertains to their ethics. They give up harsh speech. They speak in a way that's mellow, pleasing to the ear, lovely, going to the heart, polite, likeable and agreeable to the people. This pertains to their ethics. They give up talking nonsense. Their words are timely, true and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. They say things at the right time which are valuable, reasonable, succinct, and beneficial. This pertains to their ethics. They refrain from injuring plants and seeds. They eat in one part of the day, abstaining from eating at night and food at the wrong time. They avoid dancing, singing, music, and seeing shows. They refrain from beautifying and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance, and makeup. They avoid high and luxurious beds. They avoid receiving gold and money, raw grains, raw meat, women and girls, male and female bond servants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants, cows, horses, and mares, and fields, and land. They refrain from running errands and messages, buying and selling, falsifying weights, metals or measures, bribery, fraud, cheating and duplicity, mutilation, murder, abduction, banditry, plunder and violence. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in injuring plants and seeds. These include plants propagated from roots, stems, cuttings or joints, and those from regular seeds as the fifth. They refrain from such injury to plants and seeds. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in storing up goods for their own use. This includes such things as food, drink, clothes, vehicles, bedding, fragrance, and material possessions. They refrain from storing up such goods. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in seeing shows. This includes such things as dancing, singing, music, performances and storytelling, clapping, gongs and kettle drums, art exhibitions and acrobatic displays, battles of elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, goats, rams, chickens and quails, staff fights, boxing and wrestling, combat, roll calls of the armed forces, battle formations and regimental reviews. They refrain from such shows. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in gambling that causes negligence. This includes such things as checkers, draughts, checkers in the air, hopscotch, spillikins, board games, tipcat, drawing straws, dice, leaf flutes, toy ploughs, somersaults, pinwheels, toy measures, toy carts, toy bows, guessing words from syllables, and guessing another's thoughts. They refrain from such gambling. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still make use of high and luxurious bedding. This includes such things as sofas, couches, woolen covers, shag-piled, colourful, white, embroidered with flowers, quilted, embroidered with animals, double or single-fringed, and silk covers studded with gems, as well as silken sheets, woven carpets, rugs for elephants, horses or chariots, antelope hide rugs, and spreads of fine deer hide with a canopy above and red cushions at both ends. They refrain from such bedding. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in beautifying and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance and makeup. This includes such things as applying beauty products by anointing, massaging, bathing and rubbing, mirrors, ointments, garlands, fragrances and makeup, face powder, foundation, bracelets, headbands, fancy walking sticks or containers, rapiers, parasols, fancy sandals, turbans, jewellery, chowries and long-fringed white robes. They refrain from such beautification and adornment. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in unworthy talk. This includes such topics as talk about kings, bandits and ministers, talk about armies, threats and wars, talk about food, drink, clothes and beds, talk about garlands and fragrances, talk about family, vehicles, villages, towns, cities and countries, talk about women and heroes, street talk and well talk, talk about the departed, motley talk, tales of land and sea, and talk about being reborn in this or that state of existence. They refrain from such unworthy talk. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in arguments. They say such things as, "You don't understand this teaching and training. I understand this teaching and training. What you understand this teaching and training? You're practicing wrong. I'm practicing right. I stay on topic, you don't. You said last what you should have said first. You said first what you should have said last. What you thought so much about has been disproved. Your doctrine is refuted. Go on, save your doctrine. You're trapped. Get yourself out of this if you can." They refrain from such argumentative talk. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in running errands and messages. This includes running errands for rulers, ministers, aristocrats, Brahmins, householders or princes who say, "Go here, go there, take this, bring that from there." They refrain from such errands. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still engage in deceit, flattery, hinting, and belittling, and using material possessions to pursue other material possessions. They refrain from such deceit and flattery. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes such fields as limb-reading, omenology, divining celestial portents, interpreting dreams, divining bodily marks, divining holes in cloth gnawed by mice, fire offerings, ladle offerings, offerings of husks, rice powder, rice, ghee, or oil, offerings from the mouth, blood sacrifices, palmistry, geomancy for building sites, fields and cemeteries, exorcisms, earth magic, snake charming, poisons, the crafts of the scorpion, the rat, the bird, and the crow, prophesying lifespan, chanting for protection, and animal cries. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes reading the marks of gems, cloth, clubs, swords, spears, arrows, weapons, women, men, boys, girls, male and female bondservants, elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, cows, goats, rams, chickens, quails, monitor lizards, rabbits, tortoises, or deer. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making predictions that the king will march forth or march back, or that our king will attack and the enemy king will retreat, or vice versa, or that our king will triumph and the enemy king will be defeated, or vice versa, and so there will be victory for one and defeat for the other. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making predictions that there will be an eclipse of the moon, or sun, or stars, that the sun, moon, and stars will be in conjunction or in opposition, that there will be a meteor shower, a fiery sky, an earthquake, thunder, that there will be a rising, a setting, a darkening, a brightening of the moon, sun, and stars. And it also includes making predictions about the results of all such phenomena. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes predicting whether there will be plenty of rain or drought, plenty to eat or famine, an abundant harvest or a bad harvest, security or peril, sickness or health. It also includes such occupations as computing, accounting, calculating, poetry, and cosmology. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes making arrangements for giving and taking in marriage, for engagement and divorce, and for scattering rice inwards or outwards at the wedding ceremony. It also includes casting spells for good or bad luck, curses to prevent conception, bind the tongue or lock the jaws, charms for the hands and ears, questioning a mirror, a girl, or a god as an oracle, worshipping the sun, worshipping the Great One, breathing fire, and invoking Ciri, the goddess of luck. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who, while enjoying food given in faith, still earn a living by unworthy branches of knowledge, by wrong livelihood. This includes rites for propitiation, for granting wishes, for ghosts, for the earth, for rain, for property settlement, and for preparing and consecrating house sites, and rites involving rinsing and bathing and oblations. It also includes administering emetics, purgatives, expectorants, and phlemagogues, administering ear oils, eye restoratives, nasal medicine, ointments, and counter-ointments, surgery with needle and scalpel, treating children, prescribing root medicines, and binding on herbs. They refrain from such unworthy branches of knowledge, such wrong livelihood. This pertains to their ethics. A mendicant thus accomplished in ethics sees no danger in any quarter in regards to their ethical restraint. It's like a king who has defeated his enemies. He sees no danger from his foes in any quarter. In the same way, a mendicant thus accomplished in ethics sees no danger in any quarter in regards to their ethical restraint. When they have this entire spectrum of noble ethics, they experience a blameless happiness inside themselves. That's how a mendicant is accomplished in ethics. And how does a mendicant guard the sense doors? When a noble disciple sees a sight with their eyes, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of sight were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of sight and achieving its restraint. When they hear a sound with their ears, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of hearing were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of hearing and achieving its restraint. When they smell an odour with their nose, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of smell were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of smell and achieving its restraint. When they taste a flavour with their tongue, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of taste were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of taste and achieving its restraint. When they feel a touch with their body, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of touch were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of touch and achieving its restraint. When they know a thought with their mind, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of mind were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of mind and achieving its restraint. When they have this noble sense restraint, they experience an unsullied bliss inside themselves. That's how a mendicant guards the sense doors. And how does a mendicant have mindfulness and situational awareness? It's when a mendicant acts with situational awareness, when going out and coming back, when looking ahead and aside, when bending and extending the limbs, when bearing the outer robe, bowl and robes, when eating, drinking, chewing and tasting, when urinating and defecating, when walking, standing, sitting, sleeping, waking, speaking and keeping silent. That's how a mendicant has mindfulness and situational awareness. And how is a mendicant content? It's when a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. They're like a bird. Wherever it flies, wings are its only burden. In the same way, a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. That's how a mendicant is content. When they have this noble spectrum of ethics, this noble sense restraint, this noble mindfulness and situational awareness, and this noble contentment, they frequent a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. After the meal, they return from arms round, sit down cross-legged with their body straight, and establish mindfulness right there. Giving up desire for the world, they meditate with the heart rid of desire, cleansing the mind of desire. Giving up ill will and malevolence, they meditate with a mind rid of ill will, full of compassion for all living beings, cleansing the mind of ill will. Giving up dullness and drowsiness, they meditate with a mind rid of dullness and drowsiness, perceiving light, mindful and aware, cleansing the mind of dullness and drowsiness. Giving up restlessness and remorse, they meditate without restlessness, their mind peaceful inside, cleansing the mind of restlessness and remorse. Giving up doubt, they meditate having gone beyond doubt, not undecided about skillful qualities, cleansing the mind of doubt. Suppose a man who has gotten into debt were to apply himself to work and his efforts proved successful. He would pay off the original loan and have enough left over to support his partner. Thinking about this, he'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose there was a person who was sick, suffering, gravely ill. They'd lose their appetite and get physically weak. But after some time, they'd recover from that illness and regain their appetite and their strength. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose a person was imprisoned in a jail. But after some time, they were released from jail, safe and sound, with no loss of wealth. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose a person was a bond servant. They belonged to someone else and were unable to go where they wish. But after some time they'd be freed from servitude and become their own master, an emancipated individual able to go where they wish. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. Suppose there was a person with wealth and property who was travelling along a desert road which was perilous, with nothing to eat. But after some time they crossed over the desert safely, reaching the neighbourhood of a village, a sanctuary free of peril. Thinking about this, they'd be filled with joy and happiness. In the same way, as long as these five hindrances are not given up inside themselves, a mendicant regards them thus as a debt, a disease, a prison, slavery, and a desert crossing. But when these five hindrances are given up inside themselves, a mendicant regards this as freedom from debt, good health, release from prison, emancipation, and sanctuary. Seeing that the hindrances have been given up in them, joy springs up. Being joyful, rapture springs up. When the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. When the body is tranquil, they feel bliss. And when blissful, the mind becomes immersed. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, they enter and remain in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. They drench, steep, fill, and spread their body with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of seclusion. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. Furthermore, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, a mendicant enters and remains in the second absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of immersion, with internal clarity and confidence and unified mind, without applying the mind and keeping it connected. In the same way, a mendicant drenches, steeps, fills, and spreads their body with rapture and bliss born of immersion. There's no part of the body that's not spread with rapture and bliss born of immersion. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. Furthermore, with a fading away of rapture, a mendicant enters and remains in the third absorption, where they meditate with equanimity, mindful and aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare, equanimous and mindful, one meditates in bliss. They drench, steep, fill, and spread their body with bliss free of rapture. There's no part of the body that's not spread with bliss free of rapture. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. Furthermore, giving up pleasure and pain, and ending former happiness and sadness, a mendicant enters and remains in the fourth absorption, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge and vision. They understand, this body of mine is physical. It's made up of the four primary elements produced by mother and father, built up from rice and porridge, liable to impermanence, to wearing away and erosion, to breaking up and destruction. And this consciousness of mine is attached to it, tied to it. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward the creation of a mind-made body. From this body they create another body, physical, mind-made, complete in all its various parts, not deficient in any faculty. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward psychic power. They wield the many kinds of psychic power, multiplying themselves and becoming one again, going unimpeded through a wall, a rampart, or a mountain as if through space, diving in and out of the earth as if it were water, walking on water as if it were earth, flying cross-legged through the sky like a bird, touching and stroking with the hand the sun and moon, so mighty and powerful, controlling the body as far as the Brahma realm. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward clairaudience. With clairaudience that is purified and superhuman, they hear both kinds of sounds, human and divine, whether near or far. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward comprehending the minds of others. They understand the minds of other beings and individuals, having comprehended them with their own mind. They understand mind with greed as mind with greed, and mind without greed as mind without greed. They understand mind with hate, mind without hate, mind with delusion, mind without delusion, constricted mind, scattered mind, expansive mind, unexpansive mind, mind that is not supreme, mind that is supreme, immersed mind, unimmersed mind, freed mind. They understand unfreed mind as unfreed mind. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward recollection of past lives. They recollect many kinds of past lives, that is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000 rebirths, many eons of the world contracting, many eons of the world expanding, many eons of the world contracting and expanding. They remember, there I was named this, my clan was that,
I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn somewhere else. There too I was named this, my clan was that. I looked like this, and that was my food. This was how I felt pleasure and pain, and that was how my life ended. When I passed away from that place, I was reborn here. And so they recollect their many kinds of past lives with features and details. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge of the death and rebirth of sentient beings. With clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. These dear beings did bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. They spoke ill of the noble ones, they had wrong view, and they acted out of that wrong view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. These dear beings, however, did good things by way of body, speech, and mind. They never spoke ill of the noble ones. They had right view, and they acted out of that right view. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. And so, with clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, they see sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. They understand how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would, Reverend. But, Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it and project it toward knowledge of the ending of defilements. They truly understand this is suffering, this is the origin of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. They truly understand these are defilements. This is the origin of defilements. This is the cessation of defilements. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of defilements. Knowing and seeing like this, their mind is freed from the defilements of sensuality, desire to be reborn, and ignorance. When they're freed, they know they're freed. They understand rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed. What had to be done has been done, there is no return to any state of existence. When a mendicant knows and sees like this, would it be appropriate to say of them, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things? It would not, Reverend. But Reverends, I know and see like this. Nevertheless, I do not say, the soul and the body are the same thing, or the soul and the body are different things. That is what the Buddha said. Satisfied,
Ottatta the Lichavi was happy with what the Buddha said.